Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
We begin with a whimper.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. We've started off the new year with a couple of economic signals that are without a doubt recessionary. The price of oil hit $100 a barrel for the first time ever yesterday. It's just pennies away this morning. And we found out that U.S. factories had their worst performance in 5 years. The stock market is not taking these signs lightly. The Dow starts the morning at 13,043. It lost 221 points yesterday. The Nasdaq fell 42 to 2609. The S&P 500 dropped 21 to 1447. In Asia today, the markets fell more than a percent, and European shares are down a fraction so far. What do China, Abu Dhabi, and the Singapore government have in common? They've all bought stakes in American banks recently. Pretty soon, you can add Kuwait to that list. It's sitting on more than $200 billion it would like to invest. From North Carolina Public Radio, Marketplace's Janet Babin reports.
Americans are backing away from banks and financial institutions. Subprime losses there are expected to reach hundreds of billions. But the Kuwait Investment Authority is a buyer. Joel Kurtzman's a senior fellow at the Milken Institute. He says Kuwait and other foreign government-linked funds think these U.S. firms are undervalued.
The biggest problem is a lack of confidence among U.S. domestic investors, not the problems in the market. And seeing confidence exhibited by foreign investors is a good sign.
But to some skeptics, it's a sign that foreign governments could wield too much leverage in U.S. boardrooms. Economist David Hale says it's a politically charged issue.
It raises eyebrows, but we're allowing it to happen because they're simply going to be a large shareholder. They won't control management.
Hale says without other options, Americans might have to get used to having foreign investors around. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The Iowa caucuses are tonight, believe it or not. If you haven't noticed, all of the presidential candidates in Iowa support government subsidies for the corn-based fuel ethanol. Iowa is, of course, a huge ethanol state. But not everyone in Iowa is on board with this movement. John Dimsdale takes a closer look.
Iowa dairy farmer Francis Tickey has watched the price of his feed skyrocket. He worries government subsidies for ethanol are diverting too much corn to fuel.
We're going very fast down this road, and unfortunately, we're not going to see presidential candidates bucking that trend in Iowa. Maybe they'll do it in other places in the country, but not in Iowa.
But Iowa corn farmer Larry Mintz, who's taken advantage of government incentives to build a small ethanol plant, believes corn-based fuel is sustainable, and subsidies are needed for weaning the nation from Middle East oil.
It's very important to the economy here in Iowa. Hopefully they won't back away from it. I'm sure they won't talk about it nearly as much in more urban states.
The Sierra Club's national political director, Kathy Duvall, is in Iowa encouraging candidates to talk about the environmental costs to land and water of growing corn for fuel. She's not hearing that.
They do talk about what I kind of refer to as corn ethanol plus, that yes, we need to have corn ethanol. Isn't it great for the Iowa farmers and for the Iowa economy? But we also do need to look forward to what is going to be the next crop that we'll be using to produce alternative fuels and how do we make this sustainable.
Voters will hear more on that from the candidates once they leave the Corn Belt, says Duvall. Meanwhile, every presidential wannabe who thinks he or she stands a chance in Iowa is endorsing ethanol subsidies. The exception is John McCain, who's not counting on a win in Iowa. He's concentrating on New Hampshire's primary next week. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More at ThriveQ.com. And by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the health of people and communities through grant-making, employee giving, and volunteerism. Online at Medtronic.com.
I know some people who won't book a hotel unless it has a certain customer rating on the website TripAdvisor. The thing is, some of the reviews that bring down those ratings can be nitpicky, to say the least, and in some cases, vindictive sounding. If you run a hotel, you'd better be aware of what's being said about you. Lenora Chu has more.
You can ride a cable car to San Francisco's Chancellor Hotel. It's in the top 10 in that market, according to TripAdvisor, the online review site. But the hotel gets its share of wacky reviews. One guest wrote the hotel was haunted. Another insisted someone stole a shoe from his room.
Sometimes people use TripAdvisor as a get-even tool.
That's the hotel's general manager, Wes Tyler. He figures a savvy consumer takes the written reviews with a grain of salt. But what worries him is the dots that visitors can assign.
The damage that that one dot rating does to us is really kind of mean and unfair. It pulls us down, and you pull us down, you hurt us.
A decade ago, Tyler spent his time supervising housekeepers. In the internet era, he's on TripAdvisor, managing the hotel's reputation, even on vacation. He tells his side of the story on every negative review and uses TripAdvisor to tell people what to expect. An intimate European-style experience?
We try and put it out there, what we really are. And now it's, you know, if you select us and you don't like it, that's your fault, not ours. We are what we are.
Tyler has even asked TripAdvisor to take down inaccurate reviews. The site has obliged twice. All businesses should be so savvy about their online presence, says LA Times consumer affairs columnist David Lazarus.
It's the stupid companies that are out there, and God knows there's a lot of them, who don't get it, who think that they can ignore this chatter, this constant buzz and droning going on in the ether, and that somehow their business will thrive.
The folks at Yelp, another online review site, know the right buzz is critical. They even publish a handy guide for businesses. It says don't try to bribe customers who post nasty reviews, and show you listen and care. Consistently negative postings means something probably needs fixing, says Yelp co-founder Jeremy Stoppelman.
And so you can shoot the messenger, or you can do something about it. If it's legitimate, try and make a change.
Stoppelman also says don't forget to thank your superfans. On the internet, a teeny bit of goodwill travels at the speed of light. In Los Angeles, I'm Lenora Chu for Marketplace.
And I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.